There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to our broadcast down here at Barasti. You are listening to The Grill. It is day three of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. You are joined by myself, Chris McCarty, Robbie Greenfield, my regular partner on crime on Sports Tonight, and Mark Archer, everyone's favourite Kiwi, or second favourite Kiwi, it may well be, but our favourite one indeed. We're keeping an eye on the second match on day three.
It's not my fourth
three.
Or fifth favourite Kiwi, I think.
I don't know many Kiwis, in all honesty.
I must make the top ten, surely, Robbie.
I know five, and he's my fifth favourite.
I'm only joking.
You are my favourite.
Other than Richie McCaw and Dan Carter, and I can't say I really know them, they're not friends of the show, unfortunately. Sir Graham Henry is a friend of the show, so you're our second favourite Kiwi, Mark Archer. But we are keeping an eye on the early stages of Argentina against Iceland. We're also building up, of course, to a big test match over in South Africa. South Africa against England in the Rugby Internationals. We'll tell you what's going on already in those. We've had a match in the FIFA World Cup earlier today as well, France-Australia, and we'll tell you about that over the course of the next hour. We're keeping an eye on the tennis as well. We're keeping an eye on the cricket. It is England against Australia in the second ODI. And Farah the Falcon, well, she's taken flight once again, Robbie, because let's kick things off in this third hour by saying that, well, she's 4 from 5 because she got France's right as well.
She should be 5 from 5. It took a moment of genius to deny Farah the Falcon going 5 from 5. And whatever you may scoff, and we're not going to give anyone away any trade secrets here, Farah the Falcon is an extremely intelligent bird of prey, and she's got her own mind as well. I can only say that if you've ever been following Sports Tonight and been listening to the nonsense predictions that I come up with, well, I've got nothing to do. I'm not giving her any tips whatsoever because I am useless when it comes to predictions. Chris is better. Farah the Falcon has been absolutely brilliant thus far. She called Russia. Bang. That one. 5-0. Nice and easy. She called Uruguay. Left it late, but they did beat Egypt, ultimately 1-0. She called Iran, who left it even later to beat Morocco. And then last night's wonder game, 3-3 between Spain and Portugal. She did go for Spain, and she was a little bit hesitant en route to Spain. I think she knew it would be a close game, Chris McCarty, but it did take that absolute wonder goal from Ronaldo to deny Farah a clean sweep. She then came back today, and the great champions, they bounce back from adversity, don't they? She's come back into it. She's called France to beat Australia, and duly they did so. Not very easy, straightforward at the best of times, but they did manage to get the victory. So Farah 4 from 5, and she's leading the league table.
She certainly is, yes. An awful lot of birds and animals are predicting football results. We've jumped on a bandwagon that set sail about 8 years ago.
It's an arc more than a bandwagon.
It's an arc. There's Noah's Ark, so it is. But we've jumped on said arc, and Farah the Falcon is soaring. She was featured on CNN, or she is going to be featured on CNN each and every night as well. Great to see the gang down there in Abu Dhabi picked up on her story. And we're being featured in Nigeria, Australia, we're over in the UK. So Farah very much has taken flight, and she has predicted 4 of 5. So if you love that kind of thing, and it's all a little tongue-in-cheek, then do check out Farah the Falcon's predictions. All 32, or at least the first 32, are up on our website. They're up on our YouTube channel as well, at Dubai Eye Sport. Check that out, and they have a bit of fun with it. Share it, do whatever
and listen,
it is you
to all the naysayers out there, and there are some fantastic comments already that are being made from around the world. Nigeria has taken to Farah the Falcon with a little bit of reticence, it has to be said. They're not too happy because she's not predicting good things for Nigeria at this tournament, as the ball just whistles past the far post, and Argentina playing in their dark away strip, seeing a chance gone begging there. I've got to read out this comment, though, made on our YouTube page. Fans from around the world, football fans, that is, commenting on Farah the Falcon's predictions, Chris. And a Nigerian fan has said that Farah the Falcon will taste good in Nununu bird pepper soup. So someone is not really wishing glad tidings.
We should have a word to Hector about his recipe for that sort of soup.
Now, there's a lot of commenters out there on YouTube who are asking why there is no draw perch. The mechanic here is that Farah, and this is an end-to-end game, by the way, as we break away to watch Iceland burst into the Argentina penalty box. There are people that are commenting out there are saying that there's no draw perch. We've made Farah go for one or the other. She's not picking any draws. Football is a hard enough game to call as it is without having to think about the permutations of a draw. Listen, she doesn't like stalemates, this bird of prey. She picks one, she pins her colours to the mast. She's decisive, unlike Mark Archer.
What you're saying, Robbie, she doesn't sit on the fence.
She certainly doesn't.
She doesn't. Oh, my goodness gracious me. Let's break away from our nonsense talking all things Far of the Falcon and let's concentrate on the actual action. My goodness, Iceland should be ahead. 8 minutes on the clock and Argentina, it is a feature of Jorge Sampaoli's teams. They look to build from the back, but they get in a horrible mess. No surprise to see Marcos Rojo at the heart of that. He plays a square ball to Willy Caballero. He scuffs a clearance into the path of the Iceland midfielder. And it's Bjarnason as well, the Aston Villa midfielder. He has a gilt-edged opportunity from, what, 8 yards out. And he puts it past the post there. 8 minutes on the clock. And it means Argentina 0, Iceland 0. So enough
of
part of the
focus. Just out of interest, how much of this World Cup are you going to spend bashing Manchester United players?
I'll spend a considerable amount of the players that I don't really rate, Robbie. Yes, they will be coming in for some of my...
McCarty. Gilt-edged criticism.
Indeed.
Of Argentina. This is a cracking start to the match, by the way. It is end-to-end stuff. I was expecting a really, really tight affair. Certainly in the opening stages, I was expecting Iceland to be playing containment football, to be sitting very, very deep with 10 men behind the ball. That is not the case whatsoever.
It's
in
so
these
insane
opening stages at the Spartak Stadium in Moscow. We're back to the Russian capital for this sixth game of the FIFA World Cup. It has been end-to-end. We've seen chances for both Argentina and Iceland. And Argentina not convincing in these early stages. 10 minutes on the clock. It is still 0-0. But wow, Iceland should be ahead.
Yeah, Iceland should be ahead. Bjarnason with that gilt-edged opportunity that he put past the post, the Aston Villa midfielder. And my goodness, that would have been a turn-up for the books as things stand. 10 minutes gone, Argentina 0, Iceland 0. Now, Mark Archer, you have got your face buried in your iPad. You're keeping an eye on the cricket. You're keeping an eye on the rugby as well. Let's start with the cricket. It is England against Australia. This one over where?
It's in Cardiff,
and
Cardiff is giving some Welsh weather because there has been some rain issues down there in the capital of Wales and the principality. So the match is currently delayed by rain. England are in a good position, 184 for 3 after 30 of their 50 overs. The usual equation is you take your 30 over score, you double it. If you have wickets in hand, that means England may score up over 360, given the run rate over 6 runs and over at the moment. Joss Butler at the crease, 2 not out. Jason Roy's been the star of the show for England opening the batting, and he's 91 not out. Wickets to fall for England today: Johnny Bairstow for 42, Alex Hales for 26, and the captain Joe Root for 22. So England, it is delayed by rain, so we're waiting for the players to come back onto the field. 184 for 3 after 30 of their 50 overs.
There is other matches to tell you about as well, Archie, and I've got to ask you about this one because we saw India taking on Afghanistan, the opening test match, a debut for Afghanistan, given test status, of course, and what do we make of this? Fantastic that Afghanistan are making their first steps. It was an absolute demolition job. It was an innings and 262 runs victory for India. This one done inside 2 days.
Inside 2 days,
wow.
Yeah. Big win for India. But look, Afghanistan, what you've got to realise is they have a diet of T20 and maybe 50 over cricket. They barely have a first-class cricket system. So the players, when you play 40 overs or 20 overs and 50 over matches, barely play four-day cricket, let alone five-day cricket. So it's just a whole new culture shock for the Afghanistani players. You can say much the same for some of the Irish team that came into it. They lost their first test match against Pakistan. They performed with a lot of credit. They don't have barely have a first-class cricket structure in place to give players experience of playing five-day cricket. So you can argue it and take some sides on this about how tough it is. But it's the same thing when all these countries have come into test cricket, Chris. You look at the likes of Bangladesh, it's taken them a long time to really get to grips with test cricket. Sri Lanka, when they first came into test cricket 30, 40 years ago, lost everything by big margins. You just have to give them time. You have to give them experience. It's great that Afghanistan are now a test-playing nation. Well done for India for playing them. Well done for Ireland and Pakistan taking them on. It is a tough, tough ask for those teams to adapt and find the mental skills, the strength and stamina to play long innings, to bowl for long bowlers, to bowl long spells, to get the flow and rhythm in the game. It's a whole different beast, test cricket. And Afghanistan are now dining at the top table. That's a good thing for the sport. It's good that Ireland are there. It will take time. It will take time. And that's just the nature of the beast.
It was interesting as well to see that no Virat Kohli, so it could have been a lot worse for Afghanistan had the Indian captain been fit and in that side. Of course, India prepping themselves ahead of their little tour over to England. That one coming up on the horizon as well. So very good victory that for India. And I kind of echo what you're saying there in all honesty, Archie. You've got to start somewhere. It is great that Afghanistan have been handed test status. It will take time. And I'm sure there are sunnier days ahead for Afghanistan from a test arena perspective. No doubt about it, from a T20 perspective, we're about to see the T20 Afghanistani League taking place right here in the UAE. So Afghanistan, from a cricketing standpoint at the very least, Mark Archer, heading in the right direction.
Yeah, as I said, they, most of the cricket that they play short form, it's T20, it's 50 over cricket. 5-day cricket is a whole new experience for most of those Afghanistani players, and they'll need to adapt their temperament, they'll need to adapt their techniques, their skills will be tested. They're just not used to batting for long periods of time, they're not used for bowling long spells, and that they will cause some teams some problems, particularly say the Southern Hemisphere teams, when they have to come to Afghanistani conditions if they play some test cricket maybe here in the UAE. But that's where they'll be at their best. But it's a long learning curve of test cricket for Afghanistan and also for Ireland.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that second ODI between England and Australia over the course of the next 45 minutes. We're also building up as well to a semi-final day over at the Stuttgart Open. We're building up now with Rafa Nadal winning an 11th French Open. All of a sudden, Robbie Greenfield at Wimbledon has reared into the rearview mirror.
News as well that was breaking today that Andy Murray will return to action. The former world number one. Hard to believe that he was world number one just, what, 15, 16 months ago?
Yeah.
He's really fallen off the cliff due to that hip injury that will threaten to derail his entire career. He is coming back. He will be taking part at Queen's. He'll be lining up alongside Novak Djokovic, who will look to put the disappointment of going out of the quarterfinals of the French Open behind him, the three-time Wimbledon champion, playing, I think, Queen's for the first time in 6 years, I believe it is. Novak Djokovic has not played that opening tournament. He usually plays the Boodles event at Stoke Park, which is more of an exhibition match to prepare for the rigours of the Wimbledon championships at the All England Club. Looking forward to that. Roger Federer, of course, the man to beat, a man who's really fine-tuned his schedule and his playing schedule for the second straight year. He has skipped the clay court season, didn't do him any harm last year. He won, of course, in that final against Marin Cilic 12 months ago, and he is the big favourite again to add a ninth Wimbledon crown, Chris McCarthy, to that collection. He's going to be trying to keep up with Rafa Nadal. He's got 11 French Opens.
Indeed he is, yeah. 8 Wimbledons. He's going for number 9. Let me just tell you, there is one semi-final ongoing, the opening semi-final of the afternoon. It's Milos Raonic, the big serving Canadian, of course, who knocked Roger Federer out a couple of years ago, if memory serves me correct, at Wimbledon. He's taking on the Frenchman Lucas Puy. Was Puy not the winner at the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship?
Yes, he said. No, beaten by Batista Rakut in the final.
Yeah, he got to the final, so he did. But it was Milos Raonic, or it is, sorry, Milos Raonic who leads this one. He took the opening set 6-4 over at Stuttgart. And the grass, it always suits a Milos Raonic and Alexander Zverev because they're tall men. And Milos Raonic has improved his movement from the back of the court. He serves so big, Robbie Greenfield, that it all is always the grass court season that we see the best of Milos Raonic.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a huge advantage when you're that tall, when your serve is that big. You win a lot of free points on the grass that you would not win on the clay and the hard courts as well. So look for him to do well. I'd say look for Juan Martín Del Potro to have a good tournament. Marin Cilic, who made the final last year, is certainly a danger man. No one will want to meet him in the draw. I think the really interesting one is how will Novak Djokovic play. He's a three-time winner of Wimbledon. He's the man that got the better of Roger Federer in back-to-back finals in 2014 and 2015. Does he have the hunger and the desire? Is his mind in the right place to compete for this title? There are huge question marks hanging over him after, what was it, Marcos Cicinato he went out to in the French Open. I think everyone expected him to win that match, but Nadal as well has struggled to make that transition from winning a French Open to being effective on the grass. He hasn't made a final at the All England Club since 2011. So he's going to be looking to make that transition. I wonder how his body will hold up as he makes that move over to the slick grass courts. But again, it's Federer. He's the man to beat. You know, he really is. He owns that court and he knows what to do to win this championship.
You agree with that, Mark? I mean, I know Roger, but again, they always say Father Time waits for no man. He's 36 years of age now, is Roger Federer. But again, he keeps himself in such incredible shape. But is he... Can his run continue at the Grand Old Age of 36 this summer?
It certainly can. The question that you start now, for me, I have of Roger is he takes a lot of time off between these events, and you have to get your body in some sort of match fitness shape, which only really comes through playing matches. We know he's economic with his matches, the way he moves, the way he plays the game. He's not into long rallies. He hits a lot of winners. He's got a massive first serve. If his body's tested to play some long matches in Wimbledon, you start to worry about match fitness, potential injuries, issues.
Oh, my goodness. We've got to break away, Mark Archer. We have got to break away. We've got a goal in the second match, Argentina against Iceland, and it's Argentina. You heard Robbie Greenfield say, wow, this goal is a thing of beauty. This is a goal of a Jorge Sampaoli side. Marcos Rojo, and I criticised him early, watch this pass into the feet of Sergio Aguero. It is fired into the feet of the Manchester City striker.
What a first touch.
And we talk about first touches. That might just be the best first touch we've seen in this World Cup thus far. The Sergio Aguero, he kills it dead. He spins on a sixpence, and with that left foot of his, flashes one past the goalkeeper into the top corner. That is a beautiful goal. That is made by Sergio Aguero. The ball into him by Marcos Rojo is a thing of beauty. The first touch is even better. The finish, well, it just might be even better than that.
How many times have we seen him do that for Manchester City? But he hasn't been able to replicate it for Argentina. Is this the stage where Sergio Aguero rediscovers his mojo, I wonder, for Argentina? Because if he can, wow, that combination up front of Lionel Messi and Sergio Aguero, just find me a better attack in world football than that. Brazil have got a very tasty one, as have France, who we saw earlier, but that is quite incredible, and that will take some beating. Sergio Aguero rifling the ball into the top corner with his left foot, and it's Argentina 1, Iceland 0. I was about to say before that goal that Iceland have acquitted themselves very, very well in this opening 20 minutes. And Chris, they're playing adventurous football. This is a nation of, what, 330,000 people. Most of these guys are not full-time professional footballers, and yet they are playing against a two-time World Cup champion, a side that made the final in 2014, and it's been end-to-end stuff. They're giving as good as they've got. I wonder if that particular tactic, though, is going to find them out, and whether Argentina, now the floodgates might open, because the game is so open, Chris.
They're getting an awful lot of space. Lionel Messi is weaving his pretty patterns as well. He's coming deep. My goodness, we talk about Ronaldo, but Messi can do the lot. He can pass, he can drop deep, he can dictate things. Look at their little pop-offs around the corner. He is just a joy to watch, is Lionel Messi. And there again, that pass though just cut out, but he's onto it in an absolute flash. And it is Lionel Messi. Great save there though. It is all Argentina. When we come back, we'll keep you up to date with the first half of match number 2 on day 3 of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. It is Argentina 1, Iceland 0.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
Perfect time to come back to us down here at Barasti. It is Argentina against Iceland. When we left you, we told you the score was Argentina 1, Iceland 0. It now is, Robbie Greenfield.
Argentina 1, Iceland 1. If we thought it was going to be another goal, we definitely thought it was going the way of Argentina. But Iceland, their story, their remarkable fairy tale, it continues here in Spartak Stadium in Moscow. They've equalised, Chris, and it's a striker's goal. It is Alfred Finnbogason, who got on the score sheet from a scrappy cross that wasn't cleared properly. He's buried a finish low past the dive of Willy Caballero, and Iceland are back on level terms. Yes, Argentina have had all the ball. Yes, they've looked the most threatening, but Iceland, it just, they are the nation that just will not stand down. They will not be cowed, and they are level in this game.
24 minutes on the clock. What a breathless start. What a World Cup, let's be frank.
I was going to ask you, actually. I mean, this is international football finally taking its cue from the Champions League, where we've seen so many entertaining games this past season? International football has been so associated with stodgy, cautious, dull affairs, and yet I can't really, okay, the previous game, France-Australia, was not the greatest, but it's been a really high quality, and more than that, ambitious start to this World Cup. Teams are having a go.
Yep.
Teams are playing with a bit of an intent to go and create goal-scoring opportunities. They're not playing scared football. And I wonder, is that finally international football changing its philosophy and changing its style, knowing that you've got to be a bit more proactive and a bit more attacking?
I'd like to think it is, Robbie, and you're right to say that we saw Russia produce a wonderful performance in the opening night. That was then followed up, okay, a couple of 1-0 wins, Iran, and before that, Uruguay. But the Uruguay-Egypt game was a very good open game. Uruguay had a few chances, half chances in the case of Egypt. We then saw an absolute belter last night, that 3-3 between Spain and Portugal, the Iberian rivals. 2-1 earlier today, and already with 25 minutes on the clock, we've got Argentina 1, Iceland 1. As I say, as the goals go in this opening 45, we will tell you about them. Mark Archer, though, is alongside us, and Mark Archer is keeping an eye on the cricket. You're keeping an eye on, well, all the other sport that isn't the FIFA World Cup.
I am indeed. Let's go to Cardiff, the second one-day international between England hosting Australia. England won the first match in the Oval during the week on Wednesday. They're 1-0 up in the five-match series. England have made a great start to this match. Australia won the toss, put England to bat. They're currently 209 for 3 after 33 of their 50 overs. The Surrey opening batsman, Jason Roy, just brought up 100. He's 101 not out of only 97 deliveries. 9 fours and 2 sixes for the big hitting right-hander from Surrey. Josh Butler is at the crease. He's 19 not out. He's going at runner-ball stuff at the moment as well. So England look destined, though. They're going to score in excess of 330, really, and put some pressure on if they keep this run rate up. 17 overs remaining. England 211 for 3 in the ODI.
And what about the rugby earlier today? Your beloved All Blacks doing what they do best, and that is win rugby union matches. Japan as well taking on Italy, and earlier today as well we saw Ireland taking on Australia.
Yeah, 5 matches today in the world of rugby union internationals. First match was down in Japan, where Italy had their first win of 2018 in a close victory against the Japanese side, winning 25 points to 22. In Wellington, the All Blacks were victorious against a gutsy 14-man French team, 26 points to 13. The match has just been completed in Melbourne. Ireland have levelled the series 1-1 against the Wallabies. Their victory today was 26 points to 21. Third match of that series. The decisive match will be in Sydney next week. We're looking forward to the 7 o'clock kickoff in Bloemfontein. England trying to extract revenge on South Africa for their loss last week. The late kickoff is in Argentina, where the hosts will take on Wales.
That is the rugby. We will continue our build-up to that 7.05 kickoff between South Africa and England. Of course, a lot of pressure on Eddie Jones. His side is looking to avoid a sixth excessive defeat. And given what we went through in the opening 12 months of his tenure, you wouldn't have thought that, because they could do no wrong.
It was really the Six Nations, wasn't it, that derailed them. I don't think they gave Ireland the credit, perhaps, that they deserved. England were the favourites going into that Six Nations tournament, and Ireland came out of the tournament very much established as the best side, Arch, in the Northern Hemisphere. England now look like they might have peaked too soon. It looks like a team that was building so serenely to the World Cup in 2019 are now looking like a team that has a rebuild job on its hands just over a year away from the World Cup. I don't know what your reading into it is, but if I was Joe Schmidt or Eddie Jones, I know who I'd be more happier.
Yeah, England seem to have a bit of an identity crisis at the moment. They don't seem to have found a style that fits the players, and he found a lot of leaders in that team, guys that really stand up when things are tough. Owen Farrell does a good job. We know some of the forwards, Mario Toje, stand up as sort of on-field leaders, but there isn't a voice of reason, a voice of calm to go back to a game plan. The players seem confused about what sort of style, what England want to be, and they don't have too long to fix this problem. Eddie Jones has made some tough decisions during the week. He's dropped Chris Robshaw, former captain of England, out of the match day 23. He's brought in Brad Shields, who's fast-tracked from Super Rugby into the starting lineup. What does all the young England players think when they've brought a guy from overseas? They're the strongest rugby union in the world, and you've got to bring fast-track players in. So very controversial decision that. He's made a gutsy call in bringing Danny Cipriani back into the bench. He's a mercurial player, can bring some explosiveness, can bring some talent. And Joe Launchbury, one of their forward rocks, comes back in the lineup. Let's just have a quick listen to Eddie Jones about why he made those selections during the week.
You know, Chris Robshaw's been absolutely outstanding for us. But we just felt we needed another line out forward. We were anticipating the Springboks to pick the Toit, which gives them 3 locks, so Brad's line out jumping will come in handy for us.
What else does he give you?
Oh, he's a good, tough work rate player like Robbo is. So we want him to pick up what Robbo's been doing and take that to another level, plus his line out jumping.
Launchbury's back in. And that physical presence, how big can that be for England on the weekends?
Yeah, well, like any Springbok pack, you know, they base themselves on physicality. Joe's got 50 tests. He's a big guy. He's good around the ruck. He's good in maul defence, and we think he'll make an outstanding contribution for us.
You mentioned there, Mark Archer, that there's a bit of an identity crisis for England. They're not quite sure what way to set up for the players that they have. It was interesting speaking to a friend of Mike Brown's this past week, and a little bit of an insight into the mindset of the England camp, that on his first day in the job, Eddie Jones, he gave each of the players that were in the squad a little watch, a clock that was counting down to the World Cup. And in the speech that he gave, he said, listen, it's going to be hard, we're going to get knocked down, we're going to have good times, we're going to have bad times, but each and every one of you need to know that this is the path, that we're on a pathway, and we need to ensure that we are 100%, not 12 months out from a World Cup, not 2 months out from a World Cup, the day of the World Cup. And it was interesting, Mike Brown, by his bed, has this clock that is counting down to day one of the 2019 Rugby World Cup, and that's just fascinating insight into where Eddie Jones is in all of this.
Well, that clock's not is ticking away quickly, because there's only sort of 14 months until the next Rugby World Cup in Japan next September. So Eddie Jones needs to fix the problems he's got there quite quickly, because losing is a bad habit, playing poorly is a bad habit, and you got to get success quite quickly. Now, two things that Eddie Jones said when he started the job: I want to be the number one team in the world, and I want to win a World Cup. At the moment, he's far away from both those goals that he set. He's even gone to desperate sort of lengths to recruit players, English qualified, from all around the world, players like Brad Shields, who's never played a match in England, a New Zealander, luckily had two English parents. He's the Wellington Hurricanes captain. Brad Shields can't believe his luck. Well, he's been fast-tracked from the Hurricanes. He's gone straight into the England starting side. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually ends up captaining England. He's got that sort of leadership ability. Let's have a listen to the New Zealand-born flanker, Brad Shields.
It's been a bit of a whirlwind. I wouldn't have it any other way, though. Like, it's pretty amazing to be here. And as you say, a week ago or a week and a half ago, I was in Dunedin, which is, you know, completely different place to South Africa. I'm just really happy and really stoked to be in this position and grateful for the opportunity. And, it doesn't come around knocking every day. So you've got to make the most of these things, and I'm really glad I can take that.
The voice there of Brad Shields, as you'll hear listening to that, he does not sound English whatsoever. What's the parentage situation there?
He has two English parents, but he's never played a game of rugby union in the UK or in England before.
He was born in New Zealand.
Born in New Zealand. He captains the Hurricanes. He's been close, but not yet been picked for the All Blacks. We've got a lot of loose forwards. He was probably at 26 or 27, never destined really to be an All Black. He's signed to go to Wasps in the UK after his campaign with the Hurricanes finish. I believe he's going back to Hurricanes after his English tour to play, and then he's going to take his career on in the UK. Look, I don't hold anything against the guy. The other rules, he hasn't been picked by the All Blacks. He's got the right to play for England. But Eddie Jones has been very brave picking a guy out to come. It almost looks like the Sam Burgess situation,
yes,
of the last World Cup, where that disrupted the squad. They brought a guy from rugby league across who'd never played a game of rugby union before, fast-tracked him into the squad, and it didn't sit well with a lot of players who have spent their whole careers playing in England, trying to win the white jersey, and they've been overlooked for a player who's come in from overseas. But Brad Shields is a good man. Apparently he's a very good leader. He's fitted into the squad very well, but does it cause disruption? Are the players, like the likes of Chris Robshaw, who's been a captain, now being dropped for Brad Shields, does it leave a bitter taste in their mouth? I think it probably doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
And from a competitive standpoint, Arch, it's if you're picking the scraps from the table, I'm not for 1 second calling Brad Shields a scrap from the table, but if he has no career, no future as an All Black, then is that not just, you know, you're taking third string All Blacks to try and improve an England side? That's not going to win you the World Cup.
Not necessarily. Look, he's a very good player, and we're blessed with strength of depth in New Zealand rugby. And
it's a problem position for England, that, as well, isn't it? It's been a problem position for a while.
Yeah, they've struggled with their 6-7 combination. They've had the likes of Chris Robshaw in there. It's the style that they want to play. Who does he do a job? Or as Eddie Jones said when he first came to the job, Chris Robshaw's a 6.5. He's not a 6. He's not a 7, but he plays as a 7. We can't find a place for him. He's got a pretty good pedigree player in Brad Shields. A lot of big match experience, but very new at test match rugby tour. He hasn't really been on a tour with the All Blacks before, but let's see how he stands up. It's a cauldron in Bloemfontein. It's a tough place to go. There'll be 45,000 fans there wearing pretty much the green and gold of the Springboks, and they'll be blaming for English blood. So one man that has to have a good match this afternoon is Owen Farrell for England. He's the key guy. He's got to get them around the park. He's got to get them in the right positions to make the right decisions. He is the leader of the back line. Owen Farrell thinks they can turn this around, though.
We've addressed things. We've had some good conversations this week. And I think the lads have really grabbed hold of what we're doing. And we've practiced it in training. It's not just about talking about it. We've practiced what we spoke about and made sure that we've improved in that area, and I think we have done. Every game's massive. There's no point thinking about too much about what's gone on in the past. There's no point, definitely no point thinking about what's going on in the future. We've got to put everything into what we can do now for this test match on Saturday.
Owen Farrell there giving Andy Murray a run for enthusiasm in his voice. I think there you can never tell with Owen Farrell. He keeps his cards very close to his chest. What isn't in Well, it's not an argument. You can never have an argument in the fact that Owen Farrell is a very talented young man indeed, and he will have to be at his very best if England are to level the series against the Springbok. That one getting off at 7:05 this evening. Just gone 6:25 on your Saturday afternoon. You are listening to The Grill down here at Barasti. Myself, Chris McCarty, Robbie Greenfield and Mark Archer. We are watching Argentina against Iceland. We'll give you a score update when we come back. What I can tell you is it's all things Argentina.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
Welcome back to the show. We are into the 39th minute, or the 40th minute, as the case may be, of the second game of Day 3 of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. It is Argentina taking on the minnows. I don't want to be disrespectful, but they are the minnows of Iceland, the smallest nation ever to compete in a FIFA World Cup. My goodness, what a show they're putting on, Robbie.
Amazing. Argentina took the lead through a great left-footed finish from Sergio Aguero, linking up with the man that you don't believe is quite fit to wear an Argentina shirt, perhaps, Marcos Rojo, but he did provide a pretty crisp pass into the feet of Aguero. He had plenty to do. He turned on a sixpence and he rifled a left-footed shot into the roof of the net to give Argentina the lead. 4 minutes later, and Iceland came rampaging back into the game. Alfred Finnbogason. That is a mouthful, that one. The striker for Iceland bundling in from 12 yards out after confusion in the penalty box. And a lot of people, including Gary Lineker, the pundit over in the UK, have said that Argentina are going to need to score a hatful of goals in this competition if they're going to go far, because their defence looks very leaky indeed. Willy Caballero is just the start of the problems, I think, that Argentina have in this defence. But they are now beginning to seize control as we approach the half-time whistle, Chris. They've been camped out in the Iceland half for the duration of the last 15, 20 minutes or so. Lionel Messi dropping deep, starting to exert a greater influence over the game. And it could be a long second half for Iceland, because Argentina, that touch of a handball there.
No, the referee's given the corner. He's waved away the protests of Angel Di Maria, Lucas Biglia, Marcos Rojo, Nicolas Otamendi. They're all surrounding. Javier Mascherano's having his say as well, but no penalty. It is a corner for Argentina, but they are just starting to ramp up the pressure. Iceland defending deep. They would be delighted with a point in this opening match of this one, and it is Argentina 1, Iceland 1, 41 minutes on the clock. For those listeners just tuning in as well, we saw the opening game of the day, not quite a match hitting the heights of what we saw certainly last night in the shape of Spain-Portugal, but a win for France nonetheless.
Yeah, it was a hot day over in Kazan. It was a sticky pitch. There seemed to be issues with the playing surface over there, and France took a long time to get into their stride. They did finally win a penalty thanks to VAR. That one was sent upstairs. It was converted by Antoine Griezmann in the second half, but Australia hit back with a penalty of their own. Samuel Ntiti handling in the area from a cross, and Mile Jedinak converting from the spot to equalise for Australia. It was that man Paul Pogba, though. We wait to see if the goal will be credited to him. There was a deflection. There was a coming together from about just on inside the penalty area. The ball looping over Australian goalkeeper Ryan and in off the underside of the bar, Chris. It is a win, though, for France. They'll look to improve on that performance as the tournament goes forward. Encouragement from Australian perspective, because they were competitive for the vast majority of that match. But it is a win for France. And currently, with Denmark and Peru to play later on this evening, France are now topping that group.
They certainly are as well. It was pointed out to us by Arnaud, our resident French fan down here, that's more history made for France. They've become the nation to be involved in the first VAR goal or reverse decision in this FIFA World Cup. And how could we forget, back in 1998, they were the first nation that scored a golden goal. Laurent Blanc it was, beating Paraguay by a goal to nil, as France went on to win that World Cup, of course, on home soil. So we keep an eye on this one. 43 minutes on the clock over at the Spartak Stadium in Moscow. It is Argentina, managed by Jorge Sampaoli. He's come in, a lot of expectation on his shoulders, expecting to take Argentina through to World Cup glory over in Russia. It is Argentina 1, Iceland 1. That is the football. We're going to park that for a moment or two. As I say, if a goal goes in, you will be the first to hear about it. Let's break away and look at the cricket. It is England against Australia over in Cardiff. It is the second ODI of a scheduled 5. Mark Archer's got the deeds.
Yeah, England were put into bat today by Australia, who won the toss. England are making hay while the sun shines. There has been a couple of rain interruptions in Cardiff, but currently going well. 239 for 3 after 35 of their 50 overs. 15 overs remaining for England. And Jason Roy, the Surrey opener, is doing all the damage. 120 not out. I can just say he's just been dismissed. This very moment, Jason Roy has been dismissed. Caught behind by Tim Payne, the Aussie captain. Bowled by Ty for 120. Josh Butler has been going well at the crease, 27 not out. We'll wait to see who the new man at the crease is. So England have just lost a wicket. That may stall the scoring run rate a bit, but they're currently scoring closer to 7 runs and over. 239 for 4 with 14 overs remaining. They'll be looking to score in excess of 330 and put the pressure on the Aussies and try and go 2-0 up in the series.
Yeah, they certainly will. England then in control of that one. Of course, an awful lot can change as we watch Iceland scamper through. Oh my goodness, they almost took the lead. What a save from Willy Caballero to keep Iceland at bay. What a game this is.
This is unbelievable. I mean, I know that there's been a big change and a big improvement in the standard of football over in Iceland, but they're still going up against an absolute heavyweight of the international game. Players that turn out on a weekly basis for Barcelona, for Manchester City, for Paris Saint-Germain. And Iceland, their star man is Gylfi Sigurdsson, an Evertonian who has kept quiet for the majority of this season, Chris. But they are very much in this game. It really is. OK, Argentina have had absolutely the lion's share of possession, as you would expect, and another chance. And I think that was Sigurdsson who flashed a right-footed shot past the left-hand upright of Caballero on the volley. It was a good connection. I tell you what, if that had been on target, that would have taken some stopping. Iceland are in this. They are looking threatening on the counter-attack. It's going to be an intriguing second half. We're now on the 45-minute mark with only a minute of scheduled injury time to play in this first half. I tell you what, it's end-to-end stuff. I've enjoyed this one. It's been absorbing. It is Argentina 1, Iceland 1.
And just to give you an idea, we often talk possession and how possession is important in football. Not a jot of it. Argentina 77%. Iceland with 23%, and yet Iceland have fashioned the better of the chances.
You know what, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but you know what England should be, Chris? They should be a good Iceland.
What have I said to you?
They should be. I know, but they're not. They're not. This is the problem. This is the argument we keep having. Until I see evidence that they can play with as much purpose and organisational skill as Iceland, I'm going to continue to refute that assumption. We shall see how England get on. Anyway, this is not a match that involves England. It is Iceland-Argentina, and Iceland are doing a very good audition at this particular style of football. As you say, Argentina dominating possession, dominating pass accuracy, but the only thing that counts right now is the scoreline, and it is 1-1.
It certainly is one apiece, and there is the halftime whistle over at the Spartak Stadium, in Moscow. It is Argentina 1, Iceland 1. A little bit of a turn up for the books, this one. Of course, a lot can change in that second 45 minutes. One or two celebratory hugs for the goal scorer for Iceland, and well, can you blame them? He scored on the biggest stage, has Finn Bogason, against Argentina. When we come back, we're into the final throes of this afternoon's Grill Show down here at Barasti. We will look back on that opening half of Argentina against Iceland, and we're also marking your car ahead of what is a busy, busy weekend of sports. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
Welcome back to the show. We are into the final 10 minutes of this afternoon's Grill. As always, thank you very much for your company this afternoon. Fingers crossed we've been keeping you entertained, keeping you informed of what is going on, not just in the 2018 FIFA World Cup, but what's going on in the cricket, the international rugby as well. Some familiar faces popping in as well. Tom Bushell has joined our little broadcast booth down here. He is, well, walking in at the perfect opportune moment, because we've only got 10 minutes left of our broadcast, and then we will be enjoying some of the fine beverages on offer down here long into the night. It's going to be a late one. Peru, Denmark, and then Croatia against Nigeria.
It certainly is. There will be no rest for the wicked, and we will not be watching or missing a minute of football. But some reaction coming in from that first game, Chris, that early kickoff that saw France get a 2-1 win over Australia. The French manager, Didier Deschamps, has been speaking. He's been saying that the opening match is always dangerous. We're very happy to have won. We're in a good position. It was a very difficult match. The Australian team were very good. And as far as France is concerned, we weren't quick enough going forward. At the beginning of the match, it was not great. That was obvious. This is the World Cup. We must do better. He's commented also on that VAR decision. He says, I'm not going to complain about VAR today because it was in our favour. The referee did not seem to know what was going on, and he's subsequently been able to correct his mistake. We did comment on that delay in sending that decision upstairs. There was 20 seconds of play that took place in between awarding the incident and then awarding the penalty to France. And I think we can all agree that it was the correct decision, but that is a worrying precursor. If there's going to be moments or passages of play before a decision is made, surely they've got to be quicker about it. That's one for the officials. Send it upstairs and stop the play.
And I guess that's what rugby have done very well. The referees now, the officials in rugby, they waste no time in getting the TMO, making the signal and getting on upstairs. Football, and it is still, this is the thing that I guess really grates on me, is the fact that it's still a work in progress, and yet this is the greatest show on earth, and they're rolling out a product that is still work in progress.
And the thing is, no one seems to know what's going on. The referee doesn't understand it. The fans in the stadium don't understand it. And us, as spectators around the world, don't understand what's going on. And it must be a very clear process and in place to make these decisions or to use the VAR system. It should be black and white. It shouldn't be up to referee's interpretation. You know, what had happened with it, as Robbie said, the play moved on. What happens if they'd broken down the other end and there'd been another incident? Do you cancel that? Then you come back to the original decision, because as soon as the incident happens, it's either a VAR decision or not. Someone has to be quicker on that. And again, we don't know the mechanics of the process, but the process should be very clear, very defined, and everyone should understand what's going on.
If this match had taken place in 2010, Australia would probably have won 1-0, because that penalty would never have been awarded, and the goal would never have been awarded either, because remember Frank Lampard's ghost goal against Germany?
I do.
That bounced about a yard over the line. This one was even closer. This could have been a 1-0 victory for Australia, because both decisions, or both goals that France scored, required the
goal line technology.
And that's the good thing about VAR. It's put in place to rule out the shockers, where there's a very clear decision with like a penalty or a goal line incident. That's what it's there for. And it did work. I mean, we got there in the end with this convoluted process. The process isn't perfect, but I think we got the right result, given that it was a penalty and it was a goal.
And there were moments in the club domestic season where it descended into farce. I remember a game in the FA Cup between Tottenham and Rochdale where it was absolutely farcical. There were disallowed goals. There was breaks in play every 5 seconds. There was about 10 decisions reversed. No one could make up their mind. It was officiating by committee. And it's quite good to see that FIFA were under a lot of pressure to deliver a functioning product. This has to work. They're behind this. They are pushing this all the way, aren't they? They needed to make it work, and they've invested, I think, enough. As farcical as it is to see all the guys in the VAR room dressed in their full officiating kit, it has been working thus far.
It has been. Listen, let's get Tom into the conversation. Tom Bushell's joined our broadcast for the final few moments. You were watching the game a little earlier, Tom. VAR, where do you stand in it all?
My one thought on VAR is, can he not give the power to those guys in the office compared to the referee? Because if they see something they want to question, can they not send a buzz or something to the referee?
A little electric shock, maybe.
Exactly. Because it seems to me that the referee isn't really sure, and then takes about half an hour to decide, shall we send this upstairs?
And there's the
problem. Surely
the
guys upstairs go, actually, we're concerned about this. We'll stop playing.
And that's exactly what's happened. So the referee has waved it off. As the game is going on, the four officials up there are quickly hitting rewind on the TV monitor, watching it again, and then radioing down to say, actually,
okay, so that is
stop
happening.
This game. That's what's happening. Where I think more control needs to come into it is the referee's got to see that decision, and he quickly has to say, and this is where, and in rugby they do
it.
And that's it as well. They're not used to it. It's I guess, retraining the mind to say, we've got to go to the...
Another training port. I know it's got to be a working product in the World Cup, because it is the world's biggest stage of football and all of that. But the only way you're going to get things to work is start it and build from there.
Yeah.
You have to start somewhere. So, okay, it might not be working properly here, but in 4 years' time, perhaps it's well-oiled. And it is perfect. But
there's no doubt that VAR, I am of the belief, and I know there's many that aren't, Dale Gordon being one of them, that he thinks that football isn't broken. Part of the intrigue and allure of football is us having debates about big decisions or wrong decisions that happen in a weekend. But there's so much money now in the game. There is so much riding on games that I think there is a place for VAR. It just needs to be tweaked and tightened to ensure that the fans in the stadium know what's going on, to ensure the players themselves know what's going on. And more than that, and it comes back to what you said, that the referee has some semblance of control.
You talk about a big part of football is opinions and talking about it. 4 years on, or actually no more, 8 years on, we're still talking about Frank Lampard in South Africa and his goal not being allowed. We won't be talking about Pogba's goal in 8 years' time, will we? That was allowed. And that's gone now.
That VAR, as Arch said, it needs to be used only in the most crucial of circumstances. Yeah. It can't be brought into every decision a referee makes on the pitch. It's going to destroy the game. It's going to slow the game down. If he's now going upstairs because was there an infringement, was there a foul in the middle of the pitch, come on. He's got to be able to make that decision. It's the balls, it's the penalty decisions. It's those kind of key decisions. It's the sending offs that influence games and rewrite history. That's what needs to be got right.
Love it or loathe it, VAR is here in football. Absolutely. And it will stay. It's been in other sports for a long time now. We've seen video technology in tennis. We've seen it in things cricket. Like cricket. And it's taken a decade to figure it out in cricket. And it keeps tweaking, it keeps changing. And they've got a system and style that's in place. It's in American football. They even use it in basketball for the tough decisions. It's in football now. Get over it. It will stay. It's not going away.
Do you know what I can see coming here with football, soccer, football, whatever you want to say, but with American football, when you watch that on telly, there's an advert break, a commercial break every 30 seconds. I can see that being in football now. Every time they go to VAR, let's go to a commercial break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
What about this idea that's been put forward, maybe by just mischievous people who are saying, give them three referrals.
That's what I would do.
You like that?
I like the idea from NFL. The old hanky out of the suit pocket where you're able to contain one decision per manager where you're able to contain. So for example today, Didier Deschamps on the touchline would be able to say, "Hoy, I want to bring that one back. I want to see if we've got a penalty right there."
What if you've got one of those blazers where the handkerchief is actually stitched in? I mean, you'd be really annoyed,
and
wouldn't
also,
you?
You would be raging. What if it's one of those rare games where there's five or six ridiculous decisions?
Well, I mean, you've got two referrals, or one referral.
You want
three.
And if you get it right, you keep it. Is that how it works?
I'm not quite sure.
Like tennis. Yeah. Absolutely.
I've not thought it through. All I know is referrals give the power to the managers. It will maybe just make things a little easier.
And make sure you buy a blazer that doesn't have a handkerchief stitched in.
Imagine that. He's tugging, but it's not coming out.
Referee!
The whole jacket's off and thrown onto
it's
the pitch.
It's only the cheap
well.
Ones like you wear, Mr. Bush. It's only the cheap ones.
It's true. It is true. It is the cheap jackets, and I've got many of those as well. Listen, I'm conscious of time, boys. Before we wrap up, though, because it is the opening Saturday of the 2018 FIFA World Cup, we've seen a couple of matches. Okay, we've still got to see a number of the pre-tournament favourites, but who's winning this World Cup? Tommy, you've been keeping an eye, I'm sure, on the build-up to this World Cup. For you, which nation is going to emerge victorious July 15th?
Iceland. How can you look at that?
You're going for the big boys. You're going for the big boys.
I think obviously Brazil and Germany are up there, aren't they? But I think we'll get a surprise this World Cup. I think it'll be a surprising World Cup. Who? I don't know. Argentina, England... I'm not saying England are going to win it, but I think they might do better than
dear,
a lot of us.
Dear. Calm down,
say.
Tom. Calm
I'm just
down.
Excited. It's the opening weekend. I'm very excited.
Word. You wait till they play.
Everyone's saying Brazil or Germany. I think it'll be someone else. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, someone else other than Germany, Brazil, Mark Archer?
I'm going to stick with France, actually. I think France will grow into the tournament. I think they've got some players that, if they find their best game, I think they're a match for anyone. So I fancy that they'll match up against teams a lot better than they match up against a team like Australia.
When they match up
against the good teams, I think it's actually easier for them matching up teams that sit back and bring it on to them. So I think France can go a long way.
Robbie Greenfield, you're sticking with your...
I've made my bed, I'm going to lie in it. I'm going with Spain. I know they haven't had the best of preparations, that they've had an upheaval, but that being said... And I know they looked defensively frail last night, but they still have an incredible defence on paper. They've still got incredibly mercurial players. They've still got wonderful players on the ball. I'm gonna stick with them. I might be. I'm probably am wrong. But
and I've stuck my neck on the line, and I'm gonna stay right there.
You brave man.
Brazil are going to win this World Cup. They're gonna make it a sixth World Cup. Of course, no right or wrong. Well, there will be a right answer come July 15th. But all a bit of fun. Speaking of predictions, Farah the Falcon. We've got to give one last plug to her because she's doing rather well.
She's 4 out of 5. She correctly predicted France would beat Australia. The only one she got wrong was that 3-3 draw last night between Portugal and Spain. Cristiano Ronaldo costing her a 100% record. I'm not going to tell you who she's gone for in Argentina and Iceland. You'll have to hop online and check that out. You can see that on our website, Dubai1038.com. You can check it out on our social media handles, at Dubai iSport and at Dubai i1038 FM, or they're all up on our YouTube page or our website. You can watch them there. She's made 32 predictions. She's got 32 to go.
She certainly does. Someone has made a rod for their own back. That name will remain nameless for now. But that is it for us this afternoon down here at the Grill at Barasti. The second half just about to get underway. Tommy Bush, nice to see you, my man. We'll be hearing a lot more from you over the course of the summer. Mark Archer, thank you very much to you.
Good to see you, boys. Quick update from Cardiff. England 252 for 4. They have 11 overs remaining. Jos Buttler is currently 32 not out. England looking to score in excess of probably 330, and that's going to put some pressure on Australia in the second ODI.
A big thank you to Ted, our Aussie fan. A big thank you to Arnaud, our French fan as well. Thank you for sparing the time to pop on down and give us your insight and assessment of this French campaign. Robbie Greenfield, big thank you to you.
Absolutely, my pleasure, of course. Catch you tomorrow.
Catch you tomorrow, yes. And a big thank you to Benji, to Hector, to all the team back at HQ. It has been The Grill. It is day three of the FIFA World Cup. This is the sixth match after this one. Just the 58 to go. Good night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.